hold it onto the ramp like that. Maybe we can back on the dolly.
So this is the sound of George Washington's head being loaded into the back of a van.
Well, it's a huge piece of sculpture. It's called a colossal bust. He's probably twice life-size.
Lance Humphreys is the chair of the Restoration Committee of the Mount Vernon Place Conservancy. It's a nonprofit partnering with the City of Baltimore to restore the Washington Monument at Mount Vernon Place. For Humphreys, today is a big day. He's just watched a team of six art movers extract a 1,000-pound bust of our first president from its niche inside the base of the monument, then lower it carefully into a custom-built crate, slide the crate down a ramp over a set of marble steps, and then hoist it into the back of a white van.
And it all went very perfectly and smoothly because these guys know what they're doing. So it's just a relief that it's in the crate and in the truck.
A relief because after the new year, things are going to get hectic around here, and no one wants to risk dinging up a precious 180-year-old work of art. The art movers secure the cargo doors on the van, and the transport rolls carefully over the cobblestones into Mount Vernon Place traffic. It's going to be a short trip for President Washington. He's headed exactly one block south to the Walters Art Museum. That's where he'll go on display for the next year in a sculpture court. With the moving crew gone, things get quiet as Humphreys walks through the interior of the vacant chamber at the monument's base. The public hasn't been allowed into this so-called museum room since 2010, when structural concerns forced the city to close it. But that's about to change. Humphreys and his Mount Vernon Conservancy are aiming to restore and reopen the space by the monument's bicentennial, July 4th, 2015. Between now and then, they've got a lot of work to do. Pancake-sized flakes of stucco have crumbled off the vaulted ceiling of this square donut of a room, exposing the multitude of red bricks that make up the real backbone of the structure.
We're in this interior space, and if you look on the outside of the monument, you might think that it's all built of marble. The outside is all of marble, but really the monument is built of brick. These walls that we're seeing here from the inside, there's a brick core. The vaults above us are brick. Below us, there are, in the basement, the subterranean basement, there are brick vaults that are supporting the floor that we're on. And the column shaft has a brick core and a brick outer area that's just faced with marble on the inside, on the outside.
Construction began on the Washington Monument July 4th, 1815. It was the first 4th of July after the Battle of Baltimore. It took 15 years to build it. It was 1829 when the famous statue of George Washington was finally installed at the top. Ever since then, this beloved monument has had one relentless enemy, water.
And you can see all of this water damage that's coming down here, and it's raining today, and I think earlier today I was here, and there's actually drips of water just kind of dripping down here into the building. So all of this water damage has damaged this stucco that we're seeing here, and most of it can be salvaged, but then there are other places where it's just, as you can see, it's just almost like the Grand Canyon of the water has just been dripping down. It's so long that it just kind of powders and flakes off and falls to the ground. So extreme damage like this area will have to be removed and kind of and replaced in kind to match what's around it. So as we go downstairs here, there's kind of curvy stairs that lead down to the base.
We will get up to the top of the monument, rest assured, but first, a trip downstairs to the basement area directly below the museum room. This subterranean foundation is not a tourist destination, but it is a marvel of architectural engineering. A few unadorned light bulbs illuminate a dusty walkway around the central support structure. Stone blocks reach about waist high all around, and on top of them, vaulted arches of red brick support the hundreds and hundreds of tons overhead.
The interesting thing down here is that there are vaults underneath all the stairways on the outside. When we enter into these little spaces that support them, you can see that there's this brick vault kind of just springing up from the ground, and this is what supports the marble staircases above us. And you can see how there's a lot of flaking to the plaster here. So above us, as the marble cracks and moves, then water infiltrates into this, and of course that's just not good for the long-term support of this arch. So we need to stabilize the steps up top make sure there's not water getting below them, because that just kind of compromises the integrity of the arch that we're seeing right in front of us.
Loose bricks and piles of mortar dust are testaments to the toll taken by water over the years. The monument's going to need to be repointed inside and out to basically reseal it from the elements. And all that work isn't going to come cheap. The Mount Vernon Place Conservancy has modeled its nonprofit organization after other similar groups, like New York's Central Park Conservancy. This is kind of a late 20th century trend, these public-private partnerships where there's a nonprofit that enters into an agreement with a city to really take on a prominent managerial and fundraising role that the city simply can't handle itself. The Mount Vernon Place Conservancy is pooling city, state, and private funds to get the job done. So, from the basement of the monument, we now begin our ascent up a marble staircase that winds its way around the core of the column, 228 steps in all.
I would say we've walked up about 20 steps right now, maybe once around the column base. And here, there is a door that leads out onto what was originally called the terrace. This was an original viewing experience, so people would walk out here and see this. This is not going to be open right now as part of this campaign, but we'd like long-term to make this a visitor experience again, because it really is quite spectacular. So let's step out here and peek.
Oh, you can feel these stones shifting under your feet, huh?
Yes. This isn't the original roofing here. The original roof is about a foot beneath what we're seeing. But I think if you turn around and you look at the monument from here, you can see how absolutely awesome this thing is. It's enormous. And I think from the ground, you don't get the sense of scale. It just is towering over us right now. So we're on this terrace level, the base of the column. And you can see here a lot of the kind of challenges in the stone masonry that needs to be restored over time. The lower materials have not weathered as well as what's on the column shaft, just by nature of different veins to the marble and things like that. There's many more problems and issues and challenges here. Just you can see like here, cracks and staining and things that are just different and less problems up there. They all need to be treated, and there'll be more aggressive things that need to be done to the base proper.
Cool view, even just from this terrace level, huh? I can only imagine what it must look like from the top.
It's interesting. From here, you can really get a sense of how the monument is really, when you think about it, when the monument was started in 1815, this was all woods here, but they positioned it on the main artery of the city, Charles, and then it became kind of this crossroads. Any of these views from the monument really allow you to kind of experience, you know, that you're kind of at the navel of the city here, which is cool.
Back inside from the outdoor terrace level, we continue our hike up the winding staircase. Electric lights brighten the way today, but original pilgrims would have made the windowless ascent up these steps in darkness, with only a candlelit lantern to guide the way. The outer wall of this spiral staircase was originally stuccoed, but that veneer has since been removed to expose thousands and thousands of bricks, all meticulously laid by masons two centuries ago.
If you think about a brick, there's a long and a short end. The short end is called the header, and these are all laid with the header facing us, and that allowed them to make the best circle they could out of brick, because if they'd been laid the long way, it had been a little flatter curve in between. So the amount of energy to lay all of these bricks like this, you know, and there's probably several courses deep before you hit the marble on the outside. It's just a tremendous amount of labor to make this. And then as you can see here, over time, a lot of the mortar has kind of crumbled here. So that's one of the repair things that we really need to do is, you know, it's solid and it's okay here, but then very much eroded here. So this, once it erodes, then you can see how this brick kind of pops, because it just becomes structurally unstable because there's nothing to support the brick above it.
You really get a sense of how much mortar and stucco are really have come off over the decades and centuries. When you look at these steps, I mean, the steps, the edges of them are just littered with these flakes of the original building material.
Well, remarkably, This is probably just from the past 3 years since it's been closed, because before that, you know, we anticipate the city was cleaning it, and since it's been closed, no one has been removing these piles of mortar that have been falling out. But I think when you look at the front of each of these marble steps, it's amazing to see all how worn they are. And that's just, I mean, see that right there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just from, you know, there have probably been hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people who've been here over the past almost 200 years to walk up these steps, and they've clearly worn them down.
It really is a lot more stairs than you would think. Huh? I mean, I think we'd be at the top by now.
No, I don't even think we're halfway yet.
From WYPR in Baltimore, this is The Signal. I'm Aaron Henkin. If you're just joining us, we're on our way up a long, winding staircase to the top of the Washington Monument at Mount Vernon Place. Our guide, Lance Humphreys. He's the chair of the Restoration Committee of the Mount Vernon Place Conservancy, a nonprofit partnering with Baltimore to restore the monument in time for its bicentennial anniversary, July 4th, 2015. The top of the monument, alas, will still not yet be open to the public by then, but the Conservancy is working to make that viewing experience available down the road. In the meantime, though, we can give you something of a sneak peek over the radio airwaves. We're almost there, but Humphreys stops climbing for a minute to point out his favorite marble step.
There we go.
We've just arrived here at a step that says 106 feet, 1818.
Yeah, it's the only one. I think it's just remarkable that the stonemason who laid that, or someone, they carved that milestone in 1818. That's like 5 years into the construction. And someone thought they wanted to memorialize that moment, carve that in there. I think it's spectacular. Which would be neat if there were one of those each in the major years, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18. But that's the only one they did, and it survived. The carving is, it looks like it was done yesterday.
I imagine, Lance, this was at a time when not a lot of architectural features went as high as this. I mean, it was probably quite a thrill to literally, you know, build yourself up this high above the ground level.
Well, when you think about it, the base of the monument is 100 feet above sea level. So we're here on Charles Street, 100 feet above the bay, or the inner harbor, which in 1815, when you were up here, you could look down there and there would not have been tall buildings in front of you. You could have seen the water very easily. But when you think about it, that when this was begun, this was all woods, and that looking down on the city, everything would have been between one and three-story houses. A few churches would have been a little taller. So by the time they got above a three or four story building with a monument, you were dealing with something that was incredibly tall. And by the time you got to the top, you're really up tremendously high. And I think that and now that we have skyscrapers and all that kind of, you know, much taller buildings, how incredibly high up this was is not as exciting as it was in 1815 or 1850 or maybe even 1860. Once Baltimore got its first skyscrapers in the 1920s and 30s, then this would not have seemed as tall anymore. But it was a tremendous vantage point to view the city from for 100 years easily.
I see some daylight. Wow. This is really cool. So here we are. We've arrived at the top of 228 steps. I'm totally winded.
And we're panting.
I confess.
A little panting, yep.
And you go around in circles so many times, I get disoriented. We're facing...
We're facing south.
South, okay, here we go. So this is the view that the original eyes would have been able to see all the way down to the harbor.
Yep, yeah. Definitely. Some of the early descriptions describe, if you look out this way, I mean, you could have seen Fort McHenry, obviously, and really out almost to the bay, because there would have been nothing blocking your view.
Even on a dark and rainy afternoon like today, it's a pretty marvelous experience to get a view like this. Yeah, there are skyscrapers and sirens and lines of headlights and taillights down on the roads below in every direction. But even still, it's not too hard to imagine having made the climb up the stairs with a lantern to emerge here at this awesome vantage point. The harbor to the south, Fort McHenry and the bay to the west, and to the north.
The Mount Vernon Place United Methodist Church is this very large church to our right here. That church was built actually on the site of Charles Howard's house. Charles Howard was one of John Eager Howard's sons, and John Eager Howard's mansion and estate was a little to the right of the Belvedere Hotel where we're looking right now. He owned all of this land kind of north of Franklin Street and gave this square originally for Mount Vernon Place. So Charles Howard, his son, built a house there in 1829. That was actually the first house built on Mount Vernon Place. And it survived until the 1870s when actually the Methodist congregation bought it and tore it down to build this church here. But in that house, Francis Scott Key died. And so there's a marker on the front of the church kind of marking the fact that he died in the house that had been on that site.
What an amazing trick of perspective it is to be up this high and to be as high as the very top of this church's tallest steeple and to have it only be like 100 feet away.
We're very close to it. It's an astounding, it's one of my favorite buildings in Baltimore, actually.
Well, Lance, this really is a treat. I want to thank you for journeying up these stairs all the way, all 200 plus of them, and affording me and by extension our listeners this elevated view of Baltimore City from the top of the Washington Monument. It's really been a special experience. Thanks.
Sure. Even on a dreary day, it's a pretty neat view.
The Signal's Aaron Hankin visiting with Lance Humphreys at the Washington Monument back in December of 2013. Humphreys is chair of the Restoration Committee of the Mount Vernon Place Conservancy, a nonprofit partnering with Baltimore to restore the Washington Monument in time for its bicentennial anniversary, July 4, 2015. You can find out more about the effort at mvpconservancy.org.